We will be having the executive overview of the state's large information system. You're up. How are you doing this morning? Good morning.
Good morning.
Now you have a challenge this morning.
Senator Courtney is in the mood to be challenged and enlightened and step away.
Yeah.
And what else do we do?
Well, I'm going out in the hall to see if we can do the bill because I know what we're going to hear. We're going to hear things we can't understand. It's going to start a sentence with a paragraph long.
Thank you.
Do it and assume you're speaking to a class at not Brown University, Boston University.
No. Try not.
And they're all Boston University about the same.
You know, the Ernest Hemingway wrote The Old Man at Sea at the seventh grade level. Ernest Hemingway's novels were written at the seventh grade level. That's true of great authors, seventh grade. You know that?
That's right. Well, Eugene Ernest Tagare is the most intellectual paper in the state, and they gear things to this.
Yeah.
The ninth grade.
But you wouldn't know that talking to people who come before this committee.
Well, now, with that stage that we've set, folks, I want you to just relax and enjoy yourself and have a good time. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sandy Herring, and I'm the manager of the Planning and Review Section of the Information Resources Management Division, the VAS. And with me is Carl Weineke, our Quality Assurance Analyst. At the committee's request, we are here today to provide you with a summary of the major state IT projects. And those projects represent about 25 of the largest projects that are currently under development and implementation. You've received a matrix which identifies the top 10 projects. In addition to that, however, we've added summaries of the other projects as well. The reporting format for Carl's presentation this morning is reflective of the Joint Committee, the JLCIMT's desires. Historically, those have identified the manner and the format for how the committee routinely received information on large, high-risk projects. So in support of the committee's desire, the Planning and Review Section has been charged with the quality assurance oversight together with the reporting responsibilities to that committee. According to our policies, agencies that have projects which exceed $500,000 in cost are required to set aside about 4% of that project cost for quality assurance. And of that, 1% is paid to our section to make sure the agencies are in fact following through with those requirements. Carl serves as...
Part of this, I'll just make sure we don't have a DMP.
Debacle
again, is that safe?
That's correct. Serving as a member of the agency steering committee, Carl represents the state's interests at the table and routinely prepares and delivers these reports to the legislature. As Mr. Mazziotti indicated at a presentation here before, the QA function has been critical in assuring that these projects are monitored throughout their implementation. And this has provided, we believe, for some greater accountability. And when you combine this with some of the other measures that agencies have been taking, we believe that this will help ensure and protect the state, as we just discussed. So now I'll ask Carl to move ahead with his report, and we would be happy to entertain any questions that you would have with respect to that report.
Thank you.
Good morning. Members of the committee. My name is Carl Weineke. I'm the Quality Assurance Manager in the Planning and Review Section of IRMD on the Department of Administrative Services. I'm here today to update the committee on the major IT projects that are under development and implementation. I'm also here to answer any specific questions that any of the committee members would have regarding the status of any particular project. To carry on a little bit with my colleague started with, the project report that you have before you is one that has kind of evolved over the last 3 years. It consists of information that is presented by the quality assurance or the oversight contractor, which is part of that 4% allocation that we asked all projects to do. In addition, it requires a response on all the major issues from the project staff. In addition to that, I pose questions as I review projects on a regular basis to the project people, and I ask their input on specific areas that I need clarification on in an effort to update this committee with the seventh grade view of the project and get away from some of the techno language that we have. I'm pleased to advise the committees at this time all projects that we have at the state level are functioning very well, and in fact there are no projects at this time that I would even put in the realm of being in danger.
How many projects do we have?
We're currently tracking 25 projects and reporting. I'm tracking about 27 and reporting on 24 or 25. There's a couple of them that we've pulled off the report because they've gone through a pilot and now we're waiting for the next step of that process to go. But basically, I'm tracking 27. Expecting a few more to come into fruition in the next few months. And I'm hoping that some will close in the next few months. With the...
Mr. Chairman, the largest one, the Secrets project, is that the largest project you have out there?
The Secrets project, Senator Nelson, is the largest.
You have a number one. If these things aren't necessarily, are they listed in size?
The project reports, sorts them by aggregate value.
Oh, okay.
So there are projects that potentially could surpass the CSIS project, but it would be at various phases. Most projects now are phased in, and so it's an aggregate and a cumulative value on all the report on all the cost of each of the elements of the phases.
Can I ask you again, if I'm trying to remember back from interim and so forth, the phased in concept, is that again so that we don't move full bore into a project? I guess DMV, and I hate to use DMV because it's not fair to them, but nevertheless, that was the big crisis situation. Is that the basis for the incremental kind of movement rather than having a major project and it falls apart?
Mr. Chairman, members of the staff, I would think that is the driving force, but in reality, the projects are so massive that we undertake here at the state that you can't scope out all the elements of it. And so a phase development process is the one that brings in closely the best, that allows you to look at the next few years out in a project and to really develop an accurate cost picture for those. It also allows you the benefit of being able to monitor that progress.
Mm-hmm. I got another question. What's the sense of most in general? I guess if I remember, I'm trying to test it again. Do these project managers all come together? Are they sharing? So project number 8 probably knows what project number 4 is doing. Is there that kind of coordination? Or are these all just separate entities out there? Do they come together somehow or other?
Chairman, members of the committee, the projects are run independently. However, the project managers on occasion meet and have discussions. You may recall that in the last 3 years, we've developed the project management training process. Currently, we have 96 graduates of that process, and it's a rigorous 6-month project initiation through completion effort that trains our project managers in what those processes are. It also attempts to establish standards of process of project implementation here at the state. Like I mentioned earlier, we have currently 96 people through that project process. By the end of June, we will see near 150 people through that. So as we train more people in the lower echelons of the project implementation process, we will in fact establish a methodology that will be prevalent here at the state. And once that occurs, then as people communicate with others from one project to another, it's in a very consistent language, if you want to put it in that terms.
Okay. I'll let you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kerr, if I might just add a little anecdotal comment with respect to the questions that you've been asking. My understanding is that as a result of the DMV project, the state has learned some very important lessons through that experience. And Carl's alluded to a couple of those already. The first thing was that we have learned that taking these large projects and scaling them down into segments or phases is a way to sort of manage them more appropriately. The second thing is that there has been a recognition, or was a recognition, that we did not, or the state did not have properly trained sophisticated, if you will, project managers to operate these projects. And that's what he's addressed. And then, of course, the third piece, which is the piece that we're presenting today, which is the quality assurance piece, is that sort of constant reporting and oversight function that the section provides, which again, I think adds to a measure of comfort with respect to the rollout of these projects.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chairman, a while back in the last, when we were developing the project management training program, Senator Nelson came in to some meetings that we were holding with the various project managers, and we were really on a kind of a fact-finding effort at that time. So the project management process that we developed was one that was consistent with meetings of all the major project managers at the time. So the results of that are starting to show. And so I think with that development of our people, I think we'll be failure-free for some time to come. There's, as I sit in some of the steering committee meetings that I'm in, which I'm involved in several at this time, including the DMV, I'm starting to see where these processes are being demanded, and they're talking in the terms of project management rather than in the processes of project management. And so I'm real happy on what I'm seeing. To talk briefly a little bit about the CSIS project, I've got some kind of late breaking news on that. You might recall the project has been stalled since September, awaiting federal approval. We invited the feds in September. When they left, they had identified about six areas of deficiencies, and then they went off to create their formalized report. And that report has now come in, and it identified 16 areas of deficiency, but we did receive conditional certification, so that's the good news. Out of the original six that we knew about, we have already completed five of those. The remaining group we've now analyzed, and it appears that it's going to be like four people for 3.5 man months of effort. So we've invited the feds to come back in and do a formal certification in September of this year. So we're no longer in danger of that, the penalties associated with that project, unlike some people to the south of us. So we're in very good shape.
And there are several states, well, no states actually met the conditions, I think, at the time they were supposed to, if not right. And
soon enough, and I believe that's correct.
And so, actually, Oregon, even though we maybe have a conditional thing, we're in very good position, as I recall.
We're in even better condition now.
Yeah, that's
yes. So I'm real happy, and that project September should drop off because they will only be coming in and reviewing those 16 areas in September, and we think we have those pretty well scoped out.
That project ends September 30th,
won't it? It should. Mm-hmm. And that's just, it won't show on your report. That just came in, and I try to keep the committee appraised of the latest on these projects.
This was on the number one project up here. The start date actually was March 1st of 1991 rather than 96 or something like that. And the start date is before the end date. As I recall it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, that is correct.
1991?
Yes. The reason the dates on that particular project are confusing is that they originally, we started the CSIS project with a totally new development, and then we went back to modifying the existing system, so those dates are a little bit confusing as to what date you want to use. I'm now available to entertain any questions that the committee may have regarding any of the projects.
Any members, any questions?
I have to do, Mr. Chair. On project number three, the OYA Juvenile Justice Information System, if I recall, was it Multnomah County or somebody in the metro area had their, was developing their own system, and how is that, is that being integrated, or what are the confidentiality problems, or what are all the situations that are going on with that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, Multnomah County on the Juvenile Justice Information System, the background of that is that we were having a formalized state system. Multnomah County had a bond issue which allowed them to create their own internal criminal justice system, and part of the settlement of that was a youth offender program. So that project, they're proceeding, the county, Multnomah County is proceeding and developing their own, but they are also committed to getting the information that the JAGIS system will require into the JAGIS system. We haven't figured that process out yet, but the county remains a member of the Youth Authority's steering committee and is very active in the development of that process, and I think it'll just be a matter of figuring out a way to get that to migrate over and the timing.
Make it compatible.
Pardon me?
To make it compatible. So
make it share. Chairman, yes, to make it compatible with the both systems, and to bring the data in at a timely fashion. And we, at this time, the steering committee is still struggling with what timely is for that.
Project four, the FACES project, the risk there is inadequate number of trained staff. They're still having trouble keeping people, or they're still, and I seem like there was a big turnover as the project was going on, and there were some problems there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, a little bit of background in the FACES project. About 2 years ago, or maybe a little bit less time than that, that project had total turnover of project staff. In the last year, they have staffed up that, and the risk on the project was that there was two phases. Developing the system is one, and then maintaining it is another particular issue after the developer goes away. So in the last year, they've been really concentrating on developing staff. They now have developed staff, and now they need to move some of those people into these maintenance positions and actually backfill some of those people and start training some more. They are in far better shape than they were a year and a half ago. Now they're looking ahead at finishing that project and maintaining it. And so they're in a position to maintain it. Now they still have to finish a few more segments of it. But people are and will continue to be the highest risk to that project. But they've made tremendous progress.
So your report to us today as the Oversight Committee is that while you report on the top 10 here, you can assure us at this point that all 24 or 45, whatever you're working with right now, are from the standpoint of quality assurance, you are very comfortable and things are moving forward and you're in good shape.
Chairman, I am very comfortable. All projects are suffering the ills of Y2K, and staff is being diverted to work on those Y2K elements, because most of these projects all have a Y2K element to them. And so by doing that, it's putting some very, great strains on the projects, but we're not in any danger at all of losing any projects.
No other questions, Mr. Redding? Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here this morning.
Just so you know, that the JJIS refuse for the FCF. Because the OONA didn't qualify the COBOL. The CICS ran into the CSPAAS, only to be canceled by HRIS and the UNIS. It was started all over again by the LAN and the WAN, but there was an immediate review order by the FTG and the GAIN, and they found fault with the FACIS and the DC. After the DC, there was another review of the TRACIS and the LAS and UPS. Unfortunately, that was overruled by the ESAM and the LEDS. Office of WIC reviewed ONAC and gave up on ONS.
I'm
just going to tell you, that's the list. That's just the most incredible. I'd love to get up and set forward and just read what I just finished reading. Just, there it is right there. I just said that. It's just the most, I just thought I'd read it. It's just, this is just wonderful. And I did not make up a single one of those things right there. I just going through, and it was just, I just would love to do a show on that. Just thought I'd say that, Mr. Chairman.
No, I'm very impressed. In fact, Mr. Senator, I guess I would like to compliment the presenters this morning, in doing such a good job of entertaining the senator from the Capitol. Because it's really helpful, I think, and keep that in mind for the next presentation. But this is great. Could you do that again?
I really am. I mean, I've seen me. I just can't wait to do this. I'm going to do this. It's on par just because they had them all, and I think I covered most of them. And it's just remarkable what I can do with this list of what I'm looking for.
Just remarkable. Well, I want to be sure that I'm on the floor because I don't, because I think it. You know, given the cameras, I'm sure your presentation will even be better. There's no better showman. Thank you, folks, very much. Don, did you want to add anything to the informational meeting? The informational meeting opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1254. John Lilly. From the Division of State Lands this year. You didn't realize you were going to be so entertained in a technology committee meeting this morning, did you? Do you want to bring Bill Nickelberry up at the same time, or do you want to do it separately? How do you folks go out?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Division of State Lands. It might be helpful if one of the other executive department members were to join me at the table here.
Hold on. Bill Nickelberry? Don, do you want to... Oh, Mr. Nickelberry? Come on up, please. He would feel... I think he'd like, would like to have reinforcements. If you have any acronyms, try to lay them on the table now, and then we'll... Good morning. Good to have you with us this morning.
Was one of my colleagues back to Christina?
No, go ahead.
My middle initial means Ernest, and DSL is the Division of State Land.
going to my testimony. Your letterhead has facts and TPY, too, right? But,
yes, that's true. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Division of State Lands. Our comments on this bill are rather brief, but just wanted to give an overview of some of the division's activities relative to land management and what we're currently doing to make our records and the public's records available to them in as easy and readily accessible way as possible. As you probably know, the division manages about 1.4 million acres of land and waterway throughout the state. Bill and I were talking in the audience about whether it's 1.4 or 1.6 million acres, and there's an ongoing debate as to how many acres of waterway land the state has under ownership. And if you, of course, it depends upon how you measure the territorial sea and the rivers and lakes. But we know pretty well how many acres of upland we own, and that's a rather easy figure to arrive at. In addition, the division is the state's mineral rights manager on about 2 million acres that are owned by other state agencies. And this means that while parks or DOT, Department of Transportation, or others may be the owner of the surface rights and indeed the owner of the mineral rights, when it comes time to do mineral extraction, exploration, or development, the division acts as the manager of those mineral rights on behalf of the state of Oregon. The land board gets involved in land transactions when it comes time for the disposal of mineral rights, either by the division or by other state agencies. Our basic mission at the Division of State Lands is to be a land manager to generate revenue for the Common School Fund while providing sound management, effective resource conservation, and effective public or efficient public service. Over the years, we've worked very closely with the Mr. Nickelberry's office and the Department of Administrative Services to keep track of not only the Division of State Lands ownership, but helped Bill from time to time at trying to track as well the ownerships of other state agencies. We maintain and periodically update the state's mineral registry, as well as the registry of other land transactions. All of these records are currently available for public viewing, and plans are underway to make many of the records more readily accessible via the division's new land administration system, which I think might have been the LAS that Senator Courtney referred to. We expect to be able to post on the DSL website at some point here in the near future a map or a set of maps that would show the division's land ownership throughout the state, and probably some additional information relative to land management, i.e. the classification of the lands and whether they're available for lease or sale or not. And that concludes my comments.
I guess I have a question, Mr. Lloyd. Do you support Senate Bill 1254 or not?
I didn't come right out and say that, did I?
No, you really didn't. So.
Well, certainly, we can support 1254 as we understand it. It seems to be that's the basic direction we're headed in. I think
is it necessary?
I don't think so at this time. I think there are probably moves afoot within state government already, Mr. Chair, to do exactly the same kind of thing. I think that, as my colleagues will probably point out, the difficulty is in what level of detail is necessary to show property ownership information. For example, to a hunter who wants to find his way across eastern Oregon to find a parcel of public land to hunt on and to be able to avoid private land, there are readily available maps at G.I. Joe's and commercially available now to do that very thing. If, however, someone is trying to map out a gas or pipeline route, then you may need much greater detail in order to almost what we would call parcel-based information in order to know just exactly who is the specific owner of a actual square foot of landscape out there. Probably the most efficient manner in storing that information and retrieving it is from the county assessor's office, because they are basically the repository of land ownership information for all types of owners, be they public or private.
What would be the fiscal impact that we don't seem to have on here? But I'm just trying to think on your agency.
Sure, we haven't developed the fiscal impact as yet. I think that DAS queried the agencies on that, and I'm not aware of what our response is or has been at this point. We'd be glad to continue to work with the department at developing a fiscal impact for that, for this proposal.
I know that Mr. Nickelberry had a chance to
have a question, Senator. First, I was just going to check on line 7 of that. The bill says every state agency shall submit an annual report. Is there any requirement now to submit reports of ownership?
Mr. Chair, I'm Bill Nickelberry, and I'm the lands manager for the Department of Administrative Services. Senator Nickelberry, yes, there is.
There already is a requirement.
That is correct. Shall I think?
Where is the requirement? Is it administrative rule?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corsi, it's an ORS 270.180. 270.180.
So every agency will have to report to you.
That's correct.
On the status of lands owned by the state.
That's correct. If I can just continue.
Sure, go ahead.
The lands management program was actually established back in about 1990. The previous legislature for that year felt that they needed more information about state-owned real property, that really there was no single place where they could go to try to get information about state-owned land, how many agencies owned it, how much land they owned, kind of the use of the land, and issues like that. So they told the Department of Administrative Services, we need to establish that information. We want to put together a central location that kind of coordinates the issues regarding state real property. So I ended up being hired and tried to work with the state landowning agencies to establish an inventory. I should say we actually already had an inventory that was pretty much put together and had been established on the mainframe. I guess we still have that mainframe back in the 80s. We established what is called the State Real Property Task Force. There's about 20 landowning agencies that have, you know, agencies that have authority to own land. Division of State Lands owns about two-thirds of the state-owned real property. I think, I'm just going to ramble here, but I think maybe I can just throw out some information that might answer some of your questions. The general public seems to believe that most of this state is owned by the state, when in fact, the state of Oregon really owns about 5% of the state. There's about 62 million acres, I believe, that make up the entire state. We own about, you know, about 5% of that, about 3 million acres, a little over 3 million acres. When you look at the agencies that own land and you think about the Division of State Lands owning about two-thirds of that, it drops off dramatically when you get down to Department of Forestry, probably next with about 650,000 acres, and then you drop clear down to Parks and Rec and Department of Administrative Services. The DAS owns about 93,000 acres. People think Highway owns a lot of property. Well, they kind of do. But when you think about most of their real property is under the highways, and I'm not sure that that's ever going to be sold. So they actually have more transactions than any other state agency as far as buying and selling land, and that's, I think, for obvious reasons. But the other state agencies that have authority to own land, like maybe DEQ, Department of Education, Fish and Wildlife, Higher Education, Military Department, the Armories, Department of Corrections, Oregon Youth Authority, most of that real property really isn't sold. I think what we're seeing happening now with the closure of some of the state hospitals and some of that property being in centrally located areas which weren't centrally located when they were originally put there has stimulated a lot of interest in state-owned real property. The main thing that we've been doing with the lands management program is to try to provide information to the public and to the legislature about state-owned real property and be able to be a resource for you when you want to know, you know, about real property in any part of the state. Who owns it? What it's used for? What's available? And to answer questions from the public. And I get calls every month from all over the state, all over the country, as a matter of fact, but mainly within the state, asking questions about parcels that may be near someone's home, adjacent to their property, access to property along the coast. Also, lots of questions about property that may be for sale by the state. Folks also have the impression that there's just lots of land that, I think they think that we foreclose on a lot of properties. And so they think that we have all this property out there and we have fire sales and we want to sell it. We maintain a list of all property that's available for sale to the public at any one given time. And
is that on the website by any chance?
Department of Transportation actually has a website with their property, and most on it, and most of the property that is for sale is highway property, as you might well expect. We don't have it on the DAS website at this point. But most of the questions have to do with what's available out there and how can we get access to it. We also maintain a list. When folks call in and ask questions about state-owned real property, we maintain a list, put those folks on a mailing list, and we mail out that list of properties for sale on a quarterly basis, and we get updates from all state-owned, state and land-owning agencies as to properties that they have available for sale. In ORF 270, it also states that agencies, when they're going to sell property, they all notify. It's advertised in the local newspaper. Usually it's once a week for 3 weeks. So that information is out to the public also. Regarding this bill, I had several calls from the landowning agency saying, Bill, do you know what this is about? Do you know why this is needed? What does this mean? What are they really asking for? We already have a land inventory. Aren't you already providing that information that they need when there are questions about state-owned real property? We already have a land inventory. You know, what's the purpose of this? Kind of what have we done wrong or what's happening out there that makes this necessary? And I don't have an answer for that, and told them that maybe I'd discover that answer this morning or certainly hopefully in the future. So we're just kind of wondering exactly what this is needed for.
I don't have to see your name on it.
Yeah, I signed it as a sponsor, but as a reporter, I guess, but not as a sponsor.
I'm going to read your portion of it.
And don't you think I can
just okay. The area part of the services shall maintain and keep current an inventory of all state-owned real property and shall classify all such property on the basis of current use, value, idle, or surplus to agency needs. The property shall establish categories of real property necessary for management of state-owned real property. Land-owning agencies shall provide status information as requested by the Department of Agencies Owned Land, the Department to carry out its clearinghouse functions, and then it does go on to say that every October 1 of the late October, each inventory, each even-numbered year, not every year, a state agency shall submit to the department a revised and updated inventory of any surplus real property that it owns. The inventory shall list with us. I don't mean to contradict you, but, and I read quickly through this, I might want to let it go through again. I'm not sure, in looking at the bill, that the bill doesn't address something that's not in the law. So let me tell you what I think it is. It does say they've got to maintain an inventory. They've got to tell you. It appears they've got to tell you this some kind of every other year statement to you, at least any kind of surplus property. But the bill, if you read it, based on this information, the department shall compile a database to be posted on the Internet for public access, And I'm not sure. Now, I just hurriedly read this. I am a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. I hurriedly read it. It appears to me that the word public access doesn't appear here. In other words, it's conceivable that while you've got to maintain it, and every other year they've got to update it, at least in terms of surplus property for you, I'm not sure that the public access issue is in the law. I could be wrong. You understand what I'm saying? You know, I'm just currently reading through it. So that could be why legislative counsel didn't tip you, unless legislative counsel has told you we don't need the law, or told Senator George it's just in the rule that we don't need the law. But I think that may be what the law, this bill would do, is add that element. But I don't know that. I just currently read it, and I'm not trying to embarrass you, because you know I love you. I love you because you're a b-ball player, Ralph, and you and I, like, we have bonded, baby. But please, I don't mean to embarrass you, but I'm just quickly looking at the law you cited, and you got the right statute. So again, Mr. Chair, I don't. You might want to not do anything today, but you might want to get to the legislative council and see whether or not the public, because I got the phrase
public address highlighted yellow and underscored, and that may be what's going on here. Yeah. I mean, you're being very good about it. I mean, you're saying you're doing it anyway. You're not, you know, you're doing it anyway. But if somebody calls you and say that, you're doing it anyway. I'm not sure you have to per ORS 270.180. That may be the reason, though. But once again, I don't know.
And this speaks specifically to the Internet, too.
Yeah, but so I'm not. Yeah. So please, I'm not trying to embarrass you.
Well, Don, do you suppose, I see Senator George is in the room. Should we? Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Don Nezziotti, Chief Information Officer for the State of Oregon. If I could make a few observations, I think Senator Courtney is correct. Mm-hmm. What the bill appears to intend is that it broadens or enables public access via electronic means or the Internet. And that's a much different situation than a paper-based clearinghouse or a file set or something like that. And I, too, am, as Senator Nelson observed, a little confused about annual report for something that is designed to go on the Internet. But if I could just, if you bear with me a second, I have some thoughts about this. At the present time, the state's Center for Geographic Information Systems, which is within DAS, hosts the state lands database, which John referred to. And when I say hosts, it means that they utilize our technology to serve the information that they routinely collect, and then it is made available electronically. And state lands have taken the lead in this among various of the state agencies. This is much more than a web page, however, Mr. Chairman. Because what is required here is to take the kind of information that is routinely collected by Facilities Division or by Division of State Lands or any other agency that collects information on land or owns it or controls it some way. And that information has to be transformed from plots, maps, paper databases into electronic format, and then that's got to be put into what's called a web server or computing support structure and then made available, and it has to take a particular form. So the annual report language here doesn't quite do it. What one would want is something that instructed the agencies to deliver on an annual or twice or once every 2 years, Senator Courtney, a digitized database or something that was in proper format, because otherwise you're just duplicating work by the agencies. The second point I would make, and we have some experience in doing this, as I've indicated. The second point that I'd make is that we are seeing, meaning in the internal or in the Information Resource Management Division, we're seeing demands for internet-based information of all types just exploding among our state agencies. And in fact, many state agencies are beginning to provide such information. Many, virtually all, have web pages, but now they're beginning to migrate from simple web pages to actually putting public information up and making it available. And the next step is going to be transactions. And in fact, some agencies are conducting transactions, and the next step to that will be credit card transactions for renewal of licenses and, in fact, applications for jobs. And I applied for this job electronically through the HRSD webpage that's maintained by DAS. The point of this long discussion is that the time is very near when there needs to be an overall effort to begin to coordinate this activity so that we don't have a proliferation of costs in every agency developing its own web server, its own database crew to come in and digitize the information. I'd call your attention, for example, to another bill. This is House Bill 2139. This bill is directed at the Department of Revenue. If this bill is passed, it would provide revenue of around $1 million a year to support the Oregon Land Information System, and it would instruct Department of Revenue to digitize and put on the Internet tax lot data for the entire state. And this will happen. It's happening all around the country. It's not at the state level yet, but that's next. County governments have been doing this for nearly 10 years. And so, but you see, this is another, you know, piece. of this overall puzzle. And I just call your attention to the fact that we have a facility called the Oregon Digital Map Library, and the state has put millions and millions of dollars of human resources and cost into this facility, and that really ought to be the focus of these kinds of digital maps. Each agency ought to have its own. They know how to control it, and they ought to have their own database and the like. But we need to continue to focus our information resources where we have been doing that for a long time. We have an excellent working relationship among the agencies here. I just want to make sure that legislation doesn't send us off in different directions that's not in a coordinated manner. And that's
so if I hear you correctly, you're saying you're moving this direction.
Yes.
There's a different methodology of doing it for the digitiles.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Will be one methodology rather than just listing and so forth. And so maybe we're premature with this.
Mr. Chair, I don't know that it's premature. I'm simply saying it's very important that we not go off in a lot of different directions, and it's possible, of course, with committees having different jurisdictions over different groups, that's what happens, and that's why I suspect that's why.
What's your advice to this committee for 1254?
Well, I think there should be some language changes if, in fact, what we're talking about is building a database that can be posted on the Internet, which is what the language in the legislation does say. And I think that there ought to be some recognition of the digital map library or some instruction that it be part of that library ultimately. We've done a very preliminary fiscal impact analysis from our standpoint if we were to help all of the agencies that potentially would be submitting information. And it would cost about $150,000 per reporting period. So if it were every 2 years, that's about what it would cost to take digitized information, transform it into electronic form, put it on a hosting computer, and then support that, over the succeeding 12-month period. That's very doable. It's a very reasonable cost. Now, the agencies themselves, however, may have individual costs that would be associated with them, putting this in that format. And I can't speak to that. And Bill, I think, and I talked about that earlier today and agreed that, for some agencies, it might not be a great deal if they've already done it. For others, if they haven't done it, you would want to know what that is. We did not attempt to do a fiscal impact analysis. I just discovered the bill, frankly, a couple of days ago.
We'd love to hear from Senator George to get to the background of why he put the bill in.
I do think there are three issues here. And one is the annual reporting. Mm-hmm. The other is the Internet, and the other is public access. Mm-hmm. And I do want to say, in reference to Mr. Mickleberry's comment, the last subsection 5 of the statute does read, the department shall adopt rules to access state land-owning agencies for administration of the state land management program. Now, I don't know whether or not that's broad enough or whether or not you have the administrative rules, in effect, done all these three things or not. But I do think the bill legitimately raises those three issues. Well, I don't know what the chair's intentions are, so this, once again, it's exactly right. I think you can be user credit. I think you're going... You don't have to do all the things you're doing for the public in terms of the law. Just need to make, that's my interpretation of the law. Sorry. There's something here to be discussed. It's up to the chair how he wants to go.
Well, Senator George, let you join us up here. This is your bill, and let's find out what you have in mind.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I've got a chance to hear some of the discussion.
Right. It sounds like you're supporting my bill. I'm very pleased with that. Mr. Chairman, I'm very fortunate this morning to have, for the record, State Senator Gary George, District 2.
Welcome to the committee, Senator.
Very fortunate to have Marjorie here this morning because basically this came from an interim, the desire to get this information came from an interim committee dealing with prison siting. And I'd also had a little bit of experience with this as chair of the interim land use committee and also as last session's chair of parks. And one of the things that just amazed me was that nobody knew where the property was or what we owned. In fact, relative to parks, parks wanted to purchase property that was in the was in ODOT's inventory. And when I contacted ODOT about it, I found out that they didn't know anything about it, but parks knew about it. And I was kind of amazed that that was the case. And then during the prison siting issue, I was... I've been told by someone in the Wilsonville area, a farmer, about a 450-acre piece of property that was owned by the Department of Corrections. And Marjorie is shaking her head. She remembers. I called her and said, can you find this property for me? To tell you the truth, you know how we ended up finding this? Is my interim secretary and I came to Salem, went to Marion County Records, went through the security and up to the top, and paid to do a record search, and we found the property, and sure enough, it was there. But it didn't appear that anybody in state government could even tell us where this piece was. I mean, this is 400 acres of ground in the St. Paul area. So what happened was, we're moving in an area of technology just rapidly. Everybody has everything on the Internet. We've had folks during the interim ask us, why can't we be live online to our community colleges, you know, in Lakeview or Ontario, being able to participate, like, for example, in this hearing. So the technology movement is occurring. The very fact that the state would own 3 million acres of property and may not even know where it is a pretty amazing thing, and I think the taxpayers have a right to know where that property is. I have right here the book that I finally got after 6 months, which is ODOT Surplus Property. Now, I wish I had Jim Pitts here who did the audit, you know, on ODOT, because they also did an audit a couple of years ago on the property that was owned by ODOT, and they found, I'm just going to use the words that he said to me. I have not actually seen this, but I had it in my hand, and I'm trying to get it as we speak, that about 50% of the property that was actually owned by them, they didn't know where it was. Now, these could be little slivers, they could be small pieces, they could be very large pieces of property. But 3 million acres of ground is a lot of acres of ground, and it would be very appropriate for the state to keep an inventory. I mean, if the public knew that we didn't know where all the dirt was we owned, we didn't know what 3 million acres is, I mean, we know where the big blocks are, but we should have an accurate inventory of where every piece of property is, because it does affect our committee actions. When I was doing interim land use, went in the same way. We know that there's 35 million acres of government-owned ground in this state. We don't know where it is. I mean, I have some maps that show pretty big blocks, but the rest of it, there's no map that even clearly shows it. So when I went to LC with the idea, I said there must be some simple way to gather what we already have in the data banks and get it on an Internet access so legislators and the public, I believe this is information the public has the right to know. And so it is, Senator Courtney, it is my intention that this would be available, you know, to the public. And I would be happy for any amendments that you folks would deem necessary, you know, to clarify that. But I think it's irresponsible for us not to know this. One of the things, too, we have a bill that is receiving a lot of publicity in my committee. It will require every farmer, everybody, including the way the governor was saying it the other day, even homeowners, to do extensive reporting on everything they were doing relative to pesticides. And at the same time, we're requiring, may require that kind of reporting. We don't even know where our property is. So it seems to me, particularly today, with our ability to scan in this, I can go back to my office and scan that in, put it on a computer. There's all kinds of technology that enables us to quickly move data from one format to another. I think the bill's time has come, and I think it's a responsible thing for us to do to have this on record.
Questions for Senator George.
Senator Courtney. So you went to the Department of Administrative Services and you asked them the questions about the land and you weren't able to get to question the answer?
Well, actually, Marjorie might be one. It's kind of a different thing. We contacted several agencies asking about it. First, we contacted corrections, and then can she speak to this?
Sure, she can.
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, I was administrative support to the Senate Special Committee on Prison Setting, and one of the responsibilities that I was given was to contact and help Ann Sweet, who's the committee administrator of that committee, to help us find surplus property. So we contacted the Division of State Lands, and they did give us a report of the common school lands, and then we contacted staff to try and find out what other lands were available, and it was challenging.
That's a really nice way to put it. Challenging
to find surplus properties. That's what we were looking for specifically. Surplus properties. Of course, there was a size limitation attached to that request. And, you know, they tried to provide us with as much information as possible. And it is still a challenge.
Okay. Thank you for hearing this.
Okay.
A very good bill should pass.
Well, it's
Okay, Thomas, if I'm hearing everyone correct, that probably if people had gone to Mr. Mickleberry, he could have identified it right off the bat. Is that, that's what he's nodding back there. But, nevertheless, the point that you're trying to say is you're talking about easy access, internet, and I'm not hearing anyone in here saying that that's not a route we should be going. Let me try something out. My preference would be to, you now know the concern, you know the issue. I'd like to have you folks go back and take a look at this bill, and as Senator George said, amendments, but he's certainly agreeable to amendments. He just asked that you want the information, is what you want.
The information.
And we don't want to do something in here that's going to foul up other projects that you have going and so forth. So I know if you're able with the committee, I'd like to just let you folks go back and you know the issues now and come back to this committee with some amendments and recommendations so that we're moving forward all in the same direction and still in keeping it in mind what you're trying to do overall.
Senator Duncan, if I could give one example that has tremendous significance. You heard on the floor yesterday Senator Miller make reference to the damaged property, a very valuable piece of dirt.
He has brought that up.
I think he has brought it up. And you've probably even heard me mention a piece of property that we discovered in the process, and that was an additional, I believe, 209 acres that adjoins that belongs to the Department of State Lands. And my first thought when I looked at that is, first of all, it's really underused and really probably my interpretation as a farmer, not very well managed. The first thought that you have is that the piece of property is probably worth around $30 million, and of course that could go straight into the school fund. And so if we don't even know the property exists, we can't make decisions that are responsible for even affect the school fund. And I think it's a very beneficial thing for us, at least as legislators, and for a local community to know about this property. And it was amazing that we would have 400 plus acres of property out in the North Marion County, and nobody even knew about this thing. And we had to discover it, not through any government record system, but by some farmer that farms over in St. Paul.
Probably, in all fairness, maybe we should say it. You said no one knew about it. At least we were not aware of anyone. Maybe because
easily accessed. I had hours and hours in this and staff time just locating this property, and there was just no reason that should occur. I should have been able to go on the internet at home and research looking for property, as Marjorie just described, within categories of size, because it was critical to the decision we were trying to make. If we don't need to buy dirt and we already own it, let's go there. And there are some interesting properties in this piece that it took me 6 months to get. I mean, we got this piece after we actually completed the process, which tells you that it is not easily available. And yes, sir.
Okay, Senator, and members of the committee, are you agreeable to that procedure then?
Oh, yes, I am sure something like that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Don and Bill, John, we're going to sort of, you folks put it back in your hands, and we'll look forward to seeing you back to the committee with some amendments. Anything else come before the group on this particular issue? We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1254. Is there anything else to come before the group today? I mean, there's a jury.